Investing Simplified is brought to you by Price Financial Group Wealth Management Incorporated, a registered investment advisory firm. Price Financial Group has been doing estate planning since 1970 and investment and retirement planning since 1975. Individual situations may vary, and the information on this show should only be relied upon when coordinated with individual professional advice. Other parties present on this broadcast are not affiliated with Price Financial Group Wealth Management. Investing Simplified is the longest-running live financial program with a certified financial planner, estate planning attorney, and a certified public accountant to answer your questions for free. Got a tough real estate tax or financial problem keeping you up at night? Ask your questions free at InvestingSimplifiedRadio.com. That's InvestingSimplifiedRadio.com. Now, here's the host of Investing Simplified, Bo Caldwell.
We do Investing Simplified.
Welcome into Investing Simplified. However you're listening to us today, however you're joining us, thank you for making us a part of your day. As a reminder, you can get replays of the show on iTunes, Google Play, iHeartMusic, wherever you get your podcasts, or we do post it to our website, www.pfgwm.com. I'm Bo Caldwell, CFP, the CEO of Price Financial Group, and with me is our Chief Investment Officer, Matt May.
Hey-o.
Hey-o, welcome in. And Matt, we're going to get started today, you know, if it's all right with you, with everybody's favorite topic, which is, you know, I like to call it one of the, you know, retirement termites, basically, and it's something that eats into your portfolio returns, because as we get into this, you know, post-election season, as we see that end of the year coming, the markets are doing their thing. Markets are doing what markets do, and people are often comparing what their portfolio returns have been based on what they see in the market. But one of the things a lot of times people don't take into account is fees or commissions, right?
Absolutely. Fees, costs,
so commissions. So when they're thinking about, hey, I have this, you know, variable annuity contract, or I have you know, this investment account, this mutual fund, or they say, well, you know, I'm at Vanguard, I have no fees. There's a lot of layers to it. It's not just as simple as whether you have fees or don't have fees.
Absolutely. And that's something that we wanted to expand on today. Just point out what you should be looking for and where you can find that information about investment fees and things like that. So starting with the top fee that I think people usually see is an advisory fee.
Sure.
So if you're paying a financial advisor or a firm to manage your money, and there's usually a quarterly billing or maybe perhaps a monthly billing, something like that, really tough to really pinpoint that. I encourage the clients or people that I talk to in general to ask their advisor what their actual fee is. Some accounts have those advisory fees, some accounts don't. But typically, you see somewhere between 1 to 1.5% in the industry. Sometimes it could be less than 1% if the asset account values are higher. Sometimes it's more than 1.5%, but that seems a bit rich to me. But for the advisory account, that's probably the biggest fee that you'll see on an account is a visible advisory fee on the account.
Well, and one of those, there, conceivably, you're paying that fee in order to have your account managed by a professional advisor, right? Someone who does this for a living and is balancing it out. And a lot of people will say, first blush, well, there's a fee on there. I don't want to pay fees, right? Why would I want to pay fees?
So, right. That'll just eat into my return.
Yeah.
Well, there's many reasons to pay the fee. I would say you want to make sure that you understand what comes along with your fee. Does it include financial planning services or other types of offshoot services in addition to the financial management, or is it just the financial management? Sometimes a separate fee is the financial plan, and some, you know, I can see $500 to $2,000 for a financial plan, sometimes even more if the situation for an estate or an investor is pretty complex.
Sure. And you're getting, so it's key to ask, you know, the big thing you say is ask your advisor or your planner, whoever you're
definitely
working with, what is my fee? And then what am I getting for that fee? And the question may be asked of the advisor, but also of yourself when you look at your relationship with that advisory firm, right? Because a lot of people are willing to pay money to have somebody professionally manage their account. And we're not saying you shouldn't, but the idea is, how much is that fee? Is it a reasonable amount? Like you said, we have seen, I can't tell you how many times I see you know, advisory fees that are in the high ones, if not 2%. And then what are you getting if you're paying over 2% to an advisor? And if you think about that, you know, most people that get into a hedge fund, right, they go and work with hedge funds, you're getting, you know, there's a 2% fee just to be in the fund, let alone then you got to pay a portion of whatever gains you have. Now,
generally, it's like 20% of the profit or something like that. Yeah, so if you make $100, you got to give them an extra 20 for every
In addition to the 2%, $2 that you had to pay them just to have $100 there.
Yeah. First or second?
I'm not sure. I'm not sure. I don't have $15 million just sitting around so I can go be a hedge fund investor.
The 10 years trailing doesn't look so hot for the hedge funds, but that might mean that the next decade looks a little better, but we'll see how that turns out.
Could be. Who knows, right? You see if we see more, you know, continued volatility, what you're paying in that fee, that is that line item that you're seeing, a fee on your statement, and you can usually find it in other fees and expenses. It's a line item that'll show, or an advisor fee, right? Mm-hmm. But there are also other fees inside of that account if they're an investor, right, that they may not see.
One quick thing about the advisor fee. Keep in mind that that generally moves up and down with the asset level or account value of your account. Some firms charge a fixed fee. They might say, I will manage your account for $500 a year. And then, you know, it's maybe $250 every 6 months or $125 quarterly, something like that. But if you see a varying fee amount, it's generally based on your account value. So the advisor or advisory team has an incentive to make you more money because they would earn more fees, and also incentivized to not lose you as much money on the downside, because when your account value goes down, their income goes down as well. So it's a beneficial relationship for both when you make as much money as you can on the upside and lose less on the downside.
Right. Well, that's why when we talk about the fees that we have for folks that may have us take control and manage their money, the idea is we want to be on the same side of the table, right? The more money that our clients make, the better we do. And the less money that they make, if the accounts are going down, we make less money, right? You want to work with a fiduciary advisor. There is also, you'll hear the term fee-only advisor or fee for service. And those are different concepts that advisors will have. A fee-only advisor means that that advisor is only working for that account fee, meaning they don't make any other money outside of you know, that AUM or assets under management fee. A fee for service advisor is someone who you mentioned that earlier, where I'm going in and paying a certain set fee, whether that's an hourly fee or a fee for a financial plan or for work done. So they'll give you an estimate going in. In any case, when you're working with an advisor or an advisory firm, you should know upfront before you start working with that firm exactly how much you're going to be paying them, and make sure that they've told you exactly what the value they're providing. And there is a requirement to have what's called an asset management agreement or an investment advisory agreement. Depends on the state you're in, what they term it. Mm-hmm. But there is an agreement that you sign that lays that out, where that advisor has that in there. And if they're not explaining that to you, that's a problem. When people ask us, how much does this cost? What's the fees? We're very upfront because we want to be very transparent.
Absolutely. And after the advisory fee, I think it's important to really address the quote unquote hidden fees.
Yeah.
So typically these would be something like an internal management expense on either a mutual fund or an ETF. Could also be what's called 12B1 fees.
Sure.
So the number 12-B-1, you can look at those. Typically, we would see anywhere from 0.25, like 25 basis points or a quarter of a percent, all the way up to sometimes about 100 basis points or 1%. Usually it falls, sometimes it's a little bit lower, or I don't typically see anything more than 1%, but that's not going to show up on a statement. Usually you might see them on a variable annuity statement though. So if you're looking at a variable annuity statement or maybe a life insurance contract, you might see internal fees on there. They might show you all that in the transaction data. Hey, we took this fee and we took that fee. It's tougher to calculate, but those generally do equate to, you know, a higher fee on a higher balance or a lower fee on a lower balance.
That makes sense.
You know, they're typically hidden though. They're not
up front. Yeah, they're not showing you. And where I've come across the most, just in terms of reviewing portfolios, and you know, we've reviewed portfolios a lot of times where you look at, hey, you've got a client that, you know, or an investor, I should say, not necessarily a client, but an investor that has put money into maybe a variable annuity contract, you know, 15, 20 years ago. And they said, well, you know, they knew that the advisor got paid a commission up front, right? That ate into the cost. And they have, you know, maybe they see the 1%, you know, M&A fee, you know, that's on this particular contract, but they don't see the 1% rider fee. They don't see the 35 basis points to 1%, maybe over if they're in international funds for the sub account fees.
Just for the investments themselves inside it. So all those add up. And it's not uncommon to look at a variable annuity and lift up the hood and say, what costs are inside this thing with a rider, like an income rider or a death benefit rider? It's easy to see 3 to 3.5% all day long.
3 to 3.5%. And that's crazy, Doc. We were just talking about how, you know, 2% is crazy. When people start talking about, hey, I need to average, we've done a plan. So we've, you know, worked out, we've done a plan with someone, we've, you know, got them invested. We're looking at, okay, we need to get, you know, 5 to 6% a year on your account in order for you to reach your goals. If we got to get 5 to 6% and you're paying 3 to 4% in fees, that means we actually have to get 10% return from the market. And I don't know. I don't see that happening over the next 5 years or so. I definitely don't know if I see that happening long term, even though you think about the S&P has averaged about that. But that's a big, you know, they average, what, 9% a year, 8.5% a year in terms of the S&P 500 on an average. But in an account where you have 3% fee with an average 10% return, we could be down 35% as we were to start this year. Mm-hmm. And then you've got a 4% fee that's still coming out of that account.
Right, right. And, you know, there are purposes for an investment like that. They do have decent income riders. I mean, as long as you know what the product is and you know the fees associated with it, they do have guarantees, like generally variable annuities with those riders. Like I mentioned, they would have an income benefit that typically goes up over time. And it's really tough to, in this interest rate environment, to turn a chunk of change into a reliable income stream. So that can help. It's possible. But still, the fees are of the highest that we would see outside of the hedge funds we mentioned.
Right. outside of the hedge funds that you've got to be multi-million dollar. But, you know, so then the question comes, right, if we're saying, you know, there's these really high fees on having a managed account with an advisor that's managing your account, or these really high fees in a variable annuity, why don't I just take my money and go invest it in an index fund at Vanguard, right? You know, if you can't get the fees. So there is a reason to maybe pay somebody to do those things, yeah?
Yeah, there's definitely reasons. Vanguard did a long-term study on the value of a financial advisor. Vanguard, who John Bogle, they're definitely over the last decade caused a lot of investors to move towards index funds, the low expense funds, and it's really encouraged people to get invested, period. So I think that that's been a great movement. Though I would add, that's index funds are low expense, but there are investments out there that, you know, that I look for that try to beat that index. So with those internal expenses being very low, or and doing it yourself, Vanguard did do that study comparative to an average investor over the last 20 years. When the study was done, the average investor had made 2% per year, whereas an investor with a financial advisor, they found that those clients made an average of 3 to 5% more per year.
Wow.
Net of fees. Wow. So just the biggest reason, the psychological coach.
Right.
Keeping people in the game.
Yeah, when you think about, you know, the idea is, you know, not pulling out at the bottom or you know, not, you know, buying into the top, right? Is the idea to have that set up. And there's something to be said for folks that are, you know, professionals in a different, you know, in a different field that don't want to spend the time to get to know the, you know, indexes. Those can index funds can be right for your situation if you can ride that roller coaster, and or if you can, you know, keep going and keep, like you said, stay invested.
Right. And there were other benefits that they found that an advisor would provide, such as keeping an account diversified, mm-hmm. creating more of an all-weather portfolio. That was a big one. A rebalancing, you know, annually at a minimum, they found that was a value add. Sure. The biggest one was the biggest value add for an advisor was the psychological component.
Staying invested.
Yep.
Yeah. And at a certain point, you get what you pay for, right? Mm-hmm. There, you know, there's something to be said that if you're, you know, if you're working with a high class, high quality establishment, you might have to pay a little bit of money and, you know, to get, you know, get that extra help done. And a lot of times the way we look at it is that you also get a holistic view, right? When we talk about the fees that we charge for money management, for asset management, it's not just about the asset management. It's also about the financial plan and the business coach and the, you know, potentially life coach, you know.
Social Security is a big one.
Social Security strategies, incorporating, you know, planning for Medicare, all the different things that go into retirement planning or investment planning that are outside just the pure scope of the investments themselves.
Right.
And so if you have a holistic planner that you're working with, it may be worth having that fee on there, right? It doesn't mean we want you to pay an insane amount. The idea is you want to know what you're paying and make sure that it's reasonable. And that is a, you know, that's a subjective thing too. You mentioned that, you know, across the industry, you could be paying anywhere from 1 to 1.5%, depending on, you know, who you're working with and how the dollar amount that you have invested with them. There are also planners and advisors who charge a flat fee. Right. They'll say, hey, it's $1,000 a year to work with me, et cetera. I'm just making a number up. And that, you know, there is a lot of different ways. And the key is making sure that you know the fees that you're paying, the actual fees that you're paying, and making sure that you know that you're getting the value for what you're paying. And there's no wrong answer to that, as long as it's something you as an investor are comfortable with. If you'd like to have that reviewed, if you'd like to meet with our team, with Matt or myself, and have us give you a comprehensive review so you know exactly the fees that you're paying, we'll do that diagnostic on your current portfolio. We'll talk through your holistic plan, and we do all that at no cost. There's no obligation. It's something that we believe is really just to get that information out there. So if you'd like to do that, give our office a call, 503-253-3000, or shoot us an email at askbo@pfgwm.com. As a reminder, if there's something you want to cover, a question, something that's been keeping you up at night about your finances, send that question to askbo@pfgwm.com, and we'd love to talk about it. We're going to have Kevin Stege back on the program next week. Very excited about it. Taylor Cattell is going to be back on the program next week as well.
That's good news.
Really, yeah, really excited to hear some, you know, so if you got a tax question you need answered, an estate planning question, make sure to send those in. We'd love to cover them. So we're going to take a quick break here, but we'll be back with more Investing Simplified.
Are you concerned about your retirement income? Do you really understand how your Social Security benefits work? Price Financial Group Wealth Management has helped many seniors in Oregon and Washington maximize their Social Security benefits at retirement with their Social Security Seminar on Demand. Now, you can watch this valuable information in the comfort of your home by just going to pfgwm.com and click on the free Social Security kit. If you are serious about your retirement planning, you cannot afford to miss this opportunity. After all, you've invested your hard-earned dollars into Social Security all your working years, so shouldn't you get the maximum return you can get from those dollars? The future can be scary, and without a plan, that can be even scarier, especially when facing the unknown. What you don't know can hurt you. Get your free Social Security kit at pfgwm.com or call 503-253-3000.
We do Investing Simplified.
You're listening to Investing Simplified. Now, back to Bo Caldwell.
And welcome back to Investing Simplified. If you're just now tuning in, we've been spending today talking about the exciting world of fees.
Fees. Everyone's favorite
to pay the costs for services. And so, Matt, we were kind of talking about maybe people don't know how to find those, you know, inside or hidden fees. Is there a place that they can go to look those up? Is there a particular place that you go when you're doing a diagnostic?
Absolutely. The biggest resource that I use generally is Morningstar.com.
Okay.
So Morningstar, if you'd want to know your ticker symbol, the symbol that your investment trades under, you just pop it in the top left corner at Morningstar.com. And usually it's the opening page that comes up. Sometimes you have to, you know, select the fund or something. It doesn't just pop right up. But generally that first opening page of the investment, you just look for the internal fund expense.
Right.
The expense ratio.
Expense ratio, right? Mm-hmm. That's the term you hear a lot. And you should expense be able ratio. To see that expense ratio. Actually, I think, you know, oftentimes if you just Google the ticker, it does come, generally speaking, will come up. You may not know what
yep.
ticker it is, right?
Google is amazing. Tell you many things.
Right. Yahoo Finance, Morningstar, any of those. But then
Yahoo Finance is the secondary right, place that I usually go to for
the expense ratio, right? Mm-hmm. That's what they're looking for. So yep. if someone's wondering what that means, if you've been wondering what expense ratio means, that's the internal cost of the fund, right? So, right. you know, an easy way that I've always explained it to myself in my head is, if there's an expense ratio of 0.75% or 75 basis points, that you'll hear that term a lot, then when that fund for the year, if that fund made 10.75%, your statement would show you had a return of 10% because that 0.75 goes to those expenses. And there are expenses inside of a mutual fund if you're using a fund or an ETF, and that's the cost to run the fund, the cost to pay the investors, the portfolio managers, the people that that do all the due diligence, but it's also the cost of trading, right? I mean, mm-hmm. inside of that fund.
Yes. Yeah, so I've seen exchange traded funds, ETFs, trade as low as 0.03% now.
Sure.
For an S&P 500 index ETF, fund. Sure.
Yeah.
For an actively managed mutual fund, I haven't seen too many that I use that are much over 1, maybe 1.2%. But I think this is a good time to really take a tangent and talk about share classes when we're talking about yeah. expenses on mutual funds. So we're talking share classes could be the A class shares or the R class shares, the I class shares. They're, I mean, literally F. They're literally an entire alphabet. So, and all of them have their own different expense ratio. But it could be the exact same fund that has 17 different share classes, all with their own internal expenses. Interesting to know, all those 17 funds have the exact same investments inside them. It's just the internal expense that is different. So that's key to know, I think. Typically with an A-class share, yeah, which are kind of going to the wayside a bit these days with the race to index funds and fees to the bottom, race to the bottom. The A-class shares typically have an upfront sales charge. And in years past, it's been as high as 5.75%, meaning day one, you bought this mutual fund. Day two, you look at your account and it's down 5.75% because of the cost to buy it. And typically what that upfront sales charge would do is lower your internal expenses to some degree because there's usually another share class that's prevalent, and that's C shares. C shares typically have an higher internal ratio, the expense ratio, but no upfront sales charge. And they sure. might charge a 1% fee or something like that if you didn't own the C share at least a year.
Right.
So it gets confusing.
Contingent deferred sales charge.
CDSC. Yep. So on those, I mean, the different share classes have different expense ratios. They also have different mechanisms, whether it's an upfront sales charge, no sales charge, CDSC, no CDSC. The biggest ones, we use all institutional class shares for advisory accounts particularly. These are the fee-based accounts. They have a advisory fee on them. We're able to use institutional class shares, which typically have the lowest of internal expense ratios of all the share classes. So that's one of the benefits of an advisory account. You might have an A share with an expense ratio of 0.85, and the institutional share might be 0.6. So while I might charge a 1% fee, my net additional cost to the client is only 0.75% because I'm able to use a cheaper share class of the mutual fund inside the investment account.
So
that was a lot of math.
So go over break that it down. Again. Break it down a little bit slower, if you wouldn't mind. So just you know the idea.
So
not slower, lower. Not slower.
So let's say I had if you were using A shares on your own and you go into Morningstar, you look at the expense ratio and it says 0.85. And I take the exact same fund inside an advisory account. I'm able to use an institutional class share, the iShare, or maybe it's an R or something
sure,
like that.
Sure.
Different ones. There's some Zs out there. And that has an expense ratio of 0.6, not 0.85 like the A shares, just 0.6 for the institutional. I might charge a 1% fee to the client to manage their money, but because the institutional class that I use is 0.25% cheaper or 25 basis points cheaper, their net increase in costs is only 0.75%. I'm charging 1%, but I'm saving them a quarter of a percent owning the share class that's you know, cheaper inside.
Sure. So it can make a lot of sense if, you know, if you're getting access to that. You also don't get access to certain funds without having enough money, right? So
absolutely,
when you start
yeah.
talking about institutional funds or those share classes, you generally speaking have to have, you know, at least $1 million, sometimes $5 million to be a front-end buyer in those funds. And if you're not utilizing an investment group or an advisor, you don't get access to those.
That's one of the things that is least appealing to me about the industry is that it seems to reward people with more money. Like the more you have, the cheaper it is. And I don't, that's a tough part. That's a tough pill to swallow. Like if you're starting out with $250, you got to go into an A class share or something like that.
Yeah, where you're losing, that's
pretty much the only thing you can really buy.
Yeah, 5% up front goes down. So basically you're starting in the hole.
You're starting in the hole, and then you have to, you know, if your average return over a longer period of time is like 8%, and you got to spend 5.75% up front, on an average year, that's, you know, 3/4 of a year spent just trying to recoup the fee you were charged day one. So plus there's internal expenses, like we talked about, probably a 0.8-ish internal expense ratio that you also have to overcome. So it's not just the upfront sales charge. It's also the internal expense ratio on those A shares. So that's a non-advisory account. That would be a commissionable account. Inside the advisory account, it's important to know not just your fee that the advisor charges, but also the internal expenses on the investments that you have. And that's kind of where we're continuing the conversation. The internal expense ratio could be on an ETF. Those are generally lower, some not always, but generally lower. And then on a mutual fund, the institutional class shares are generally cheaper than the what we would call retail investor shares.
That makes a lot of sense. You can save money doing that. And all this is to say we're not telling you to pinch pennies or to be penny smart and pound foolish, right? The idea is if you look at your net, you know, gain, whether that's from the investment side or what you're getting from that relationship, it can make sense to have, you know, that advisor working on it. The big thing to take from it, I think, really is to take a look at what you're paying inside of your accounts, right?
I think it's important to really look at the risk that you're taking also.
Sure.
You know, and for the fees that you're paying, because I want it to be a fair comparison. Like, you shouldn't expect to outperform the S&P 500 if you're super low risk.
Sure.
And vice versa. So expense ratios are part of it. Also, it's not really, I guess, feasible to hold your advisor to fortune telling, to
sure.
to tell the future, et cetera. It's not really what an advisor would do. An advisor is there to really craft an investment strategy for you that really grows your portfolio over time. And then at one point, perhaps in the future, you'd like to not work anymore. You have to go the other way. You have to flip the switch and create an income stream with it.
And distribute it, right? So that's the key. So that's, you know, when it comes down to it, that's what you should be paying for, right? Is it not, can we grow our nest egg to get it to the point where then we're comfortable with the plan to turn it into income? Because when you're not working anymore, you got to turn it into income. And all these sort of financial termites can really hurt you on the fee side, but as long as you're getting the value for the fees, and it could make sense to be paying for it, right? So I think that's a good spot for us to take a break here from the, you know, folks are probably beating their heads against the wall at this fee conversation. But the problem is, if you don't send in a question that we can answer, something that's been bugging you, we're going to talk about fees. So send that question to investingsimplifiedradio.com or ask Bo at pfgwm.com. And as a reminder, if you'd like to have that complimentary review, we'll do that diagnostic on your portfolio, both from a risk perspective, like Matt said, and a fee perspective, to make sure what you're paying is reasonable, the amount of risk that you're taking is reasonable, and the amount of risk that you would like to take. We also are happy to incorporate that holistic financial plan, that work optional plan rather than a retirement plan, work optional, get you to the point where you may or may not have to work anymore, but you get to make that choice. Give us a call, 503-253-253. 3000. We'll be right back with more Investing Simplified.
Legal matters are never easy, but they are especially difficult when they involve the most important people and aspects of your life. This is Taylor Cattell, founding partner of KG Law Group. It's important to have an attorney who cares about your unique circumstances and knows how to get the outcome that is best for you. At KG Law Group, we specialize in estate planning and family law, including wills, trusts, powers of attorney, guardianship, and divorce. At KG Law Group, we provide both expertise and compassion as we guide you through the complex legal landscape. We balance knowledge of the law with exemplary client service. Whether you're reacting to a crisis or planning for the future, we are here to help. If you need legal advice, give us a call today and schedule a consultation at 503-878-8948. That's 878-8948. Or visit us online at kglawgroup.com. That's kglawgroup.com, serving Oregon and Southwest Washington. KG Law Group, your family, your legacy.
Got a tough estate tax or financial problem keeping you up at night? Ask your questions free by emailing askbo@pfgwm.com. You're listening to Investing Simplified. Now, back to Bo Caldwell.
And welcome back to Investing Simplified. If you're just now joining us, thank you for tuning in. Reminder, send your questions that you would like to have covered on future shows to AskBo, A-S-K-B-O, B as in boy, O, at pfgwm.com. And we're happy to cover those. We're happy to answer them. As a caveat, and I say this every week, everything we talk about here on the show is general purposes only. It's general investment information and knowledge. It is not to be construed as individual investment advice because we don't know your specific situation. So we can't give you specific investment advice. We can tell you what we know and talk about different ways that we would cover that. As a reminder, next week we're going to have Taylor Cattell and Kevin Stege, the tax animal, back on the show. So it's a nice grouping of the knowledge trust. It'll be Matt's first experience with Kevin Stege on the show. So it'll be super exciting to ask your tough tax questions. You missed when we had Steve Anderson from First Class Property, Property Solutions on.
Totally bummed about that, but I did want to follow up with him anyway.
Which I know you're going to be reaching out to him. So that's a testament to, if you'd like to get a hold of Steve. I know that question has come in a couple of times on the text line. If you want to get a hold of Steve over there at First Class Property Tax Appeals, I always mess his company up, but I'm just the worst. It's First Class Property Tax Appeals. You can reach him at 503-869-4349, or you can reach him at steve@1stcp.com. That's steve@1stcp.com. And Steve, has had a lot of success with our clients that we referred to him and other folks that are thinking that their property tax might be a little out of whack.
Multnomah County.
Just in case you're living like Matt and you live in Multnomah County here in town, those
that was property a brisk
taxes
adjustment from
going up
from Washington County. I'll tell
you. Well, and if you look at they're increasing some of those property taxes. So if there's something that has been changed, one of the things, Matt, that Steve talked about, and it's going off on a tangent here, but it's a good thing to think about, is if you bought a house that had had improvements done on it, but that were never finished. So when somebody applies for a permit to convert a garage or build a secondary structure, that goes on the value of the house like it gets completed. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
And so if you buy a house and it's not finished, you call Steve and his team, and they'll come out and look at it. And they can, a lot of times, they've saved thousands of dollars a year for our clients, and that's literally thousands of dollars a year. And they take a small portion of that, right? They take 20% of what they save you because they got to earn a buck, but you get to save that for the rest of time. And the big key, he said, is when you buy the house, you got to make sure, or when you do, if you're going to do a remodel, you're going to remodel the house, make sure that you call his team and at least have them take a second look, because you want to make sure that set in stone appraisal value is the right value, because otherwise you're going to be stuck for life on building up those property taxes. And I don't mind paying some property taxes. I don't want to pay more than my fair share. So we'll pivot from taxes. Right, we were talking about fees before. Now we're talking about taxes. Lots of fun things that people love.
Trying to get your money. Just try to take your money.
Let's pivot I think, to an applicable situation. We've got some questions that have come in about specifically real estate investing, but alternatives to the stock market, basically. Folks who are kind of freaked out, you know, by the election, by the volatility, by the coronavirus, all these things that have caused the market itself to take, you know, tumbles or go up or just be too volatile for them. But there are alternatives out there, you know, and I was hoping you could talk to me and talk to the folks about some of those alternatives and what you see and what you like and what you don't like about them.
Sure. And I think it's important when you're talking alternatives. I mean, there's reasons, like in a very high stock market, certainly it looks expensive, technically speaking, as I've mentioned in prior shows. And then the bond market doesn't necessarily look all that appealing either, with low interest rates and potential rising interest rates in the future. That means your principal goes down. So we look at other alternative strategies to diversify the portfolio, try to deliver some additional gains perhaps in some areas. But as far as like a volatility play, typically some alternatives can be more volatile than others. So I'd start with the volatile ones. And that would be commodities.
Okay. So commodities being oil, gas, gold, silver, right? Those are
natural resources, precious metals.
They say, so I've heard, and I have gotten the question a lot, and I know the answer, but for folks that may not, they hear, well, gold and silver is safer than the stock market.
Safer than the stock market.
Say, you know, don't trust
beats
the stock
inflation.
Market. Don't trust
it's
the stock market.
It's an inflation hedge. It's a
go into gold.
Store of currency. It's store of value. I mean, there's, when I look historically, it depends on what time frames you're looking at. I mean, it can hold up well against inflation. It can hold up well against the stock market. It can hold up well in a fear-based environment. But it's just, it's not always. It really is its own, it's its own animal. So it's, I think when I look at gold, I see a value that has crossed into all-time highs recently, but it's taking a long time to get there from prior highs. Whereas the stock market's been there for 6 years, 7 years. Maybe even more. So I still think that precious metals has room to run. Gold specifically has room to run. Silver, I think so too. I'm pretty intrigued with platinum.
Sure.
You know, platinum is a more rare gold, is a more rare precious metal than gold, excuse me. And it's trading much, much cheaper than gold.
So, but the thing that I've heard, whether or not, you know, we're talking about, hey, you think maybe gold's got some room to run. I've heard, you know, from a gold perspective, from folks who focus on that, that there's maybe a good pullback coming. And then from there, that's when we really take off. But the point is, what I hear you saying, it's not safer than the stock market, despite what those people peddling that, you know, getting emails and are saying, hey, move all your money to gold might say.
It, you know, we always give the caution, try not to put more than 5% of your money in any one particular stock or investment. So if you're putting more than 5% of your money in a precious metal, I mean, it is volatile and it's also risky. It's not a sound investment decision from the experts, I would say. So just be careful on that. And it's tempting that everybody gets the same fear-based articles and advertisements and such.
Yeah, well, I'd say, you know, what's that? What is it? Yukon Jack, the guy from, you remember that old Christmas movie? You know, it's gold and silver.
Silver and gold.
Yeah. But you get we all get these things that are sent to us that say, hey, go move all your money to gold, move all your money to silver because it's a safe hedge. And you know what they've been saying lately is move all your money to cryptocurrency.
Mm-hmm. Cryptocurrency is another big one.
So cryptocurrency also not safer than the stock market, conceivably?
No. It's its own new animal. It's really come to the forefront lately. It's made a lot of headlines because coins like Bitcoin, the most popular one, went to $19,000 a coin, a little more than $19,000 a coin. I'll have to throw my somebody I know under the bus. They'll know who this is, but I won't give any names. But they have 10 Bitcoin that are trapped in the Ethos because they don't remember the username and password to their account.
So that's one of the drawbacks,
right?
Yeah. So one Bitcoin right now, trading, what did you say, $10,000?
I think it's $6,000 or $7,000.
So I mean, it's $60,000 or $70,000 that this person can't get
locked up. And it was $19,000 a coin. He had 190 grand trapped in that account. and you have, and it's not like you can call up tech support or request a password reset. You don't remember that code, it's gone.
Well, that's my understanding with Bitcoin is, right, the whole blockchain technology, and I'm using air quotes here because I don't, full disclosure, folks, I don't really, I get questions all the time.
I know enough to be somewhat knowledgeable, but the experts would still be, you know, would be able to chew me apart. It's like, oh, well, the one changed to a zero over here. And
well, that's my understanding. It's just a bunch of code. And it is, the idea is, the concept behind this particular email, you know, sales pitch, besides silver and gold, is that the government is taking us away from their, that's why there's a coin shortage, and that's why they're not going to cash anymore, and all these other things, and you should go to
U.S.
blockchain.
Currency is
going to
crash. The U.S. in general is going to crash, and you're going to need gold. We always, you know, wonder about that, because then if that is true, then how do you pay for stuff in gold? You know, we've kind of joked around about it. Going to the grocery stores, like how many shavings
of
your gold bar
for a loaf of bread?
It'd be difficult. It seems unlikely, but you never know.
Owning physical gold is not a bad hedge, right? We talked about doesn't mean it's a bad thing to own. Or if you own an ETF that tracks an exchange traded fund that tracks gold,
we're going
to
get mail from all the gold. The gold bugs that.
Yeah, that everybody likes it. It's not a bad thing to own. We're not casting aspersions on gold or silver or crypto. The idea that they are safer than the market is what we're casting aspersions on, right? They can be a really good investment. They can make you a lot of money. They can also lose you a lot of money.
I believe that there was a large, like a cryptocurrency storage in Canada that got
hacked.
Like
I heard, yeah,
hacked
I heard
something
that,
like
yeah.
350 million at the
right.
time.
That sounds
and this
right.
was when Bitcoin was way, way cheaper than it is now. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And you know, that's the kind of thing with the cryptocurrencies is if it gets hacked, there's no, the idea of the blockchain technology is it just changes from your pocket to somebody else and there's no real way to trace it.
Right.
And that's kind of, that's the offshoot, kind of the tangent behind cryptocurrencies is it's more, it's private and such. The transactions are more, I guess, concealed. And there's also worry from the government that there's nefarious activity going on with these types of currencies and things. So the regulations on them, they're still, I mean, you can't even right now that I know of invest in anything Bitcoin. You can own a Bitcoin, but there's no investment out there where you can, like an index fund or a mutual fund. I think it's all
there's Bitcoin Cash, but the idea is you can track the price of Bitcoin, and there's companies like Marathon or Solo. There's a couple other companies that are out there, Riot blockchain technology companies that operate similarly, but
there are companies that have part of their assets in Bitcoin.
Right.
And that's kind of a proxy or a substitute to owning the actual Bitcoin or digital currency, because there's more than just Bitcoin. Bitcoin is the most popular. So it's an avenue to invest. And if it were to go back to all-time highs, you know, it looks to be about triple from here. I'd have to double check that, but
it'd be a lot. Well, again, it's not that you can't make money doing it. You know, I remember doing as an exercise in just for funsies a couple years ago, looking at, you know, when it was at all-time highs, I was looking at it. And if you had in 2010, when it went public, right, when you didn't have to just mine it, when you could actually track the price of it, where the pricing of the Bitcoin was, if you put $1,000 in, and then I think it was 2017 that I was looking at this. So 7 years later, that $1,000 would have netted you $17 million. Now, you would have had to hold on through a lot of ups and downs. And, you know, operating that way is silly. It's just a kind of like it was a fun mental exercise for me because, you know, you're not going to hold on. You take your $1,000 and it becomes $100,000. You're bloody well selling.
Oh, yeah. And our fantasy football league commissioner has invested our league dues in Bitcoin and it's up 30%. So it's like right now, guys, the league payout for the first place, second place, third place, it's up by 30%. So I had, okay.
Sweet. Well, it could be good.
Sweetens the pot.
Sweetens the pot.
But that thing can turn on a dime
and
have much, much more volatility than the overall stock market. And we would use a term called beta. A beta of one means if the stock market is up 10%, then that investment that has the beta of one would also be up 10%, and vice versa. If it's down 10%, investment with a beta of one would be down 10%. This thing, you know, Bitcoin or cryptocurrencies, even precious metals, they don't really typically have less volatility than the stock market to a lot of different degrees.
Right. Well, and you know, the thing about, you got to be careful of when investing in these sort of alternatives, and there's a couple more that we're going to talk about, but one of them is commissions, right? When you think about changing your, if you're buying physical bullion with gold and silver, which again can be a good hedge, if you're buying that physical gold and silver, you got to pay a commission to buy it, right? And then you got to pay a commission to sell it back at whatever price that particular broker is paying for it. And so a lot of times when I have people that are asking about gold or silver, we talk about those ETFs that track them. Similarly with Bitcoin, if you're going to buy a physical Bitcoin, there's a transaction fee. You got to be able to buy and hold it. And it's not so easy. It's not as easily tradable. That's the other danger with having these physical alternatives, is it's only worth what somebody's willing to buy it for, right? So it makes it harder if you're not just tracking the prices. So let's step away from these commodities, right? We talked about gold and silver, platinum, Matt's favorite, and Bitcoin, which are
worth a look at, right?
Which are not safer than the market, but could make you a lot of money, could also lose a lot of money. It's not a bad investment. We're not casting aspersions, but what about, you know, we hear people talk about real estate as a nice investment alternative, right? And that's probably a little less volatile, right, than the overall market.
Yeah, there's a couple of different ways to invest in real estate. Obviously, we can go out and buy a rental property. It would be tougher to buy an apartment complex or
commercial building.
In that avenue, you might want to think about a private investment, like a real estate investment trust,
okay,
where you're buying a sleeve of a small piece of that property. So you're a part owner in either a big property or a whole basket of 70, 80, sometimes 100 different properties that all generally usually fit the same kind of criteria, either all apartments or all commercial or all healthcare or data centers, something along those lines.
Sure. And so that would be, that's abbreviated for folks who don't know, as REIT, R-E-I-T, right? And they have both, you mentioned the private REITs, which are not publicly traded, right? Which tend to have a little bit less volatility than the overall market because they're not bought and sold every day. You can also find publicly traded REITs, right? Publicly traded REITs are out there on, you know, they're a ticker on the stock market. They trade like a stock. So they can move really fast and really hard. And like we said, generally speaking, it's less volatile than the overall stock market. But if you do have a housing bubble, there's a lot of risk to it too.
Absolutely. So with the private REITs, there's more and more situations arising lately because of COVID. There's a lot of employees that are just saying, hey, we're able to operate our business with our employees working from home. Do we really need this office space?
Right.
And so, you know, that's kind of permeated through the market, and real estate has actually, in a lot of different places, just come crashing down. I'm seeing 40, 50, 60% losses in certain private real estate and even publicly traded real estate investments. So that's been it's been a tough year. So conversely, the stock market is positive on the year as of this recording. So that's been a pretty big and wide gap. It can be tough waters in those, particularly private real estate investment trusts, because in a situation like this year where you have people moving en masse out of the buildings, out of commercial real estate and working from home, now what is that that private real estate investment trust manager doing? Somebody says, hey, I want my $100,000 back out of this with my investment. I want my $100,000 back.
Yeah, yeah.
And they're like, well, I can't really sell my building for a 50% loss so I can pay you your $100,000.
Yeah,
so what they would do is they would just clamp it down.
Sure, which can hurt
now,
people.
Yeah, which is now, it means it's illiquid. You can't sell it.
Yeah.
Generally speaking, and I see this a lot, it's two ways out. You either have to be disabled or pass away.
Sure. And even then, they don't guarantee the liquidity on those events either, right?
Right, some of them. Right, yeah.
Because you can get into situations where they have clamped it down for a lot of those reasons. Now, again, doesn't mean that it's a bad position to have. It could be a good position for you to have because, generally speaking, real estate moves not in tandem. You mentioned beta before, which is a measure of how much your investment will move in lockstep with the overall stock market. And generally speaking, barring a 2008 style crisis where the housing market tumbles as well, generally speaking, real estate is sort of a steady eddy 3-4% increase in terms of real estate values over time, right? So that can take a lot of that, you know, fluctuations out. And like you said, you can't get a commercial building is going to cost you millions of dollars, and you maybe can't afford that, and maybe you don't want to deal with tenants and trash and cleaning the toilets, right?
The three T's of real estate, right?
Tenants,
trash, and toilets.
So, you know, maybe you don't want to go out and buy just a rental property, right? So it's a way to pool money similar to a mutual fund. The state of Oregon actually will not let you put more than 10% of your liquid net worth in a privately held real estate investment trust. We tend to think that is even too much, right? Mm-hmm. We talked about, we don't like 5%, more than 5% of your portfolio, of your liquid portfolio in any particular position. Then real estate investment trust might be a good fit for you if that's your type of investor, but never do we recommend going more than 5%, because what happens if it goes to zero? What happens if they lock it up and you can't get out? So we can't be having folks that have too much money in there, right?
Yeah, if it ties up your money for whatever reason, then, and we're relying on that, it's just a bad scenario.
Right. But it can make a lot of sense for folks that are looking to diversify their portfolio, and they are out there. The big key with that, similar to the other alternative investments that we've talked about, is make sure you know what the broker or the advisor that you're buying it with is getting paid off of it, right? And make sure that that's not coming out of your pocket, because a lot of times those have big commissions. And generally speaking, we see this a lot with sort of, you know, I heard another financial show that's a national show that does brokers behaving badly, which I always like to listen to when they find, because it just saddens me that there's so many people in our industry who are taking advantage of people. And a lot of times they will do fancy financial maneuvering and use a lot of jargon and get you to put more than you should into a product like this, and they get paid a lot on it. And that's why they do it, right? As opposed to working with a true fiduciary firm that's going to put your interests first. That's why we like that we're a fiduciary firm, because we have clients that ask. I tell you, I've had a couple of listeners that have come in and met and asked if we do gold and silver physical bullion. They've asked if we do, you know, real estate, if we do physical real estate, and we don't, because we're not set up to do that. You can't, you know, real estate people will want to hold in an IRA, right? Which you can do. People want to hold physical gold or physical silver in an IRA. You can do that. But you have to go through a specialized broker, and you go through a specialized brokerage firm. And you know what I'm hearing when I say those things?
Specialized fees.
Yeah. Cha-ching, cha-ching, cha-ching. Exactly.
We would prefer in our setup to have publicly traded investments there. The publicly traded real estate investments can be more volatile, believe it or not, than their privately traded counterparts, because of just that they're publicly traded.
So you can buy them and sell them.
Yeah, when fear sets in, when there's a market stampede, those things can get battered, which, you know, generally leads to more volatility. If you're savvy and you like your position and it's not too much in your portfolio, it could be a good opportunity to add. But certainly keep an eye on your total overall allocation, or how much money you have in alternatives as a whole, because I wouldn't think that anything more than 5-ish, 10% tops in alternatives combined would be anything more than that would be just a little imprudent, in my opinion.
Yeah, and just maybe setting yourself up for a little more disaster. And that doesn't, when you're looking at your overall portfolio, we're not just talking about traded stuff. If you're a real estate investor and you have a lot of money tied up in real estate, that can be a really good market hedge. It can be a really good place for your money, especially if you're earning rental income, right? Mm-hmm. That can help you get to that retirement space. But we want to make sure that you have the overall picture, and you know exactly how much you have in each bucket, that we're not over, you know, we're not putting too many eggs in one basket. If you want to have that reviewed, if you want to come in and see us, and we'll give you, again, a no strings, no obligation consultation. We do that for our radio listeners. We are willing and able and very happy to tell you here's our opinion. And there's no bones about it. We'll tell you exactly what we think. And a lot of times, and we've met with lots of people, we say, hey, this is great. This looks awesome. You're doing a great job. And those are my favorite meetings.
So hey, Bo, should I buy a rental property?
Right. So don't feel...
Ask us.
Yeah, don't feel like we are going to just come in and tell you to blow everything up. So, you know, we want to make sure that you get that information out there. Give us a call, 503-253-253. 3,000. We're happy to sit down with you. Matt and my team, we take very good care of you. We want to make sure that the information is out there. If you like what we have to say and you want to work with us, great. But worst case scenario is you had a free professional second opinion.
Happy investing out there, everyone.
Happy investing. Thanks for listening today. Stay kind to each other. Stay calm out there. Stay safe. We'll talk to you next week. This has been Investing Simplified.
Price Financial Group, wealth management.
You can listen to past shows of Investing Simplified at pfgwm.com. This show was brought to you by Price Financial Group Wealth Management Incorporated, a registered investment advisor firm with offices at 16100 Northwest Cornell, Suite 140, Beaverton, Oregon, 97006, and 7105 Southwest Varnes Street, Suite 175, Portland, Oregon, 97223. You can reach us by calling 503-253-3000. That's 503-253-3000. Investing Simplified is a registered trademark owned by Price Financial Group Wealth Management Incorporated.
We do Investing Simplified.
Hello, this is Kevin Stege, shareholder with Baker & Colson Certified Public Accountants, serving the Portland and Southwest Washington areas for almost 40 years. We are a full-service accounting and consulting firm offering our services to a wide range of business and individual clients. One of the largest expenses to a household or a business is its tax burden. While off-the-shelf tax products can help file simple returns, they can't know your plans for the future and not only provide insight and planning to help you get there, but actually help you along the way. There are just some things that can't be replaced by experience. Whether you are just beginning your working career or have a well-established business with many employees, rely on the professionals at Baker & Colson to help in an efficient, accurate, and personalized manner. We are located at 2414 Northeast Division in Gresham and can be reached at our website at bakercolson.com or 503-666-5569. That's bakercolson.com, 503-666-5569. And remember, at Baker & Colson, our service is the product our clients remember most.